John Harry Turan, it's an honor to continue talking with you about the metaphysics of money. You've got such a wealth, pardon the pun again, such a wealth of knowledge about this that it's really enlightening to hear the way you put it into perspective. And I think that one of the challenges, one of the main challenges that people face is a dislike and sometimes even a hate toward the rich. They look at rich people and they don't like them. They don't like the cars they drive. They don't like the fact that everything seems to be working out smoothly. They don't like the clothes they wear. They don't like the fact that their children can go to great schools. They don't like the fact that they can fly anywhere in the world. They just get really disgusted by the rich, but at the same time, they want more money. So, can you speak to that, John, about how people can look at those people who have more than them, but not really get angry at them so that they can themselves have more money?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, Steve, that more people don't have more or are not happy with what they have, and thus they can't bring in more to themselves because that, think of the tremendous energy that's wasted in disliking people. Really. I mean, you have to really look at that person, look at the car he is driving. He doesn't deserve that. You know what you're saying when you say that? You're saying, I don't deserve that. You are doing something that closes doors instead of opening doors to happiness, wealth, money, money of all kinds, and all kinds of good things. You are actually being envious because you are angry and you think you've been working so hard and you've been doing everything else. In fact, I've heard people say, Steve, that, he isn't that smart. I'm smarter than he is. Well, what happened? You guys, did you take an IQ test or something? Do you know the hours he has spent way into the wee hours of the morning working on his project or doing this? Do you know the sacrifices he's made to get to where he is? I don't know, but I know a lot of rich people and I know a lot of poor people. And I know sometimes that the rich people have really sacrificed. I'm not saying all of them. Some, of course, one nice way to get it is to inherit it, and then you don't value it. You think you're entitled to it. Now, I also know a lot of rich, obnoxious people who think because they have the money, they are better than everybody else. And I know also some poor, wonderful people who could have made a lot of money and didn't really care to do that, but just kept giving service and doing nice things. And each one has to live his own life. So there is no need to look at people who have a lot of money and worry about theirs, but there's a heck of a lot of need to look at ourselves and look at what we believe about money, what we believe about rich people, what we believe about how easy or hard it is to make a living. And if we let I like to put it this way, I know your name is Steve G. Jones, but the Dow of Jones, if you will, Dow Jones, if we let our lives be run by the Dow Jones averages or something like that, then whenever the market goes up, we're very, very, very happy. And whenever it goes down, depending on which side of the equation you are, whenever it goes down, we're very, very sad. And hey, I know a lot of people who do that. First thing they do when they get home, they check, how did the market do today? Now, if I've got to live my life around the market as to how it does every minute, then my question to me would be, what are you doing here using up all the oxygen if that's all you're doing? But if I say to myself, I'm going to use a little bit of my wealth to help a little schoolboy or schoolgirl in this far-off country who would never get any clean water to drink or might have malaria or so forth, then there's a sense of purpose, a sense of accomplishment. So it's what we think. We go back again to that. I cannot repeat it too often because, it bears repeating all the time. Start at exactly where you are. Take inventory of yourself, whatever it is you're doing. I really believe that one of the greatest inventions of all times is actually the yellow pad and pencil or pen. Or nowadays on your computer, there's Notepad or TextEdit or whatever they have, depending on Mac or PC. And that is something that's there It's virgin territory. A white sheet of paper or a yellow pad, a yellow sheet of paper, and the pen. And now you can let ideas roll or fall right off your fingers and your head into that paper, and you write down where you are. What do you think some of your talents are? Now, here's a good thing. I did very well in science when I was in high school and thought that that's what I should study. And I thought from the position of money that, I'd better study and do very well in science because scientists always seem to have jobs. And then here I am, in a strange country, and they asked me what I was going to major in. And I didn't know what a major was because I thought that was somebody in the army. And I asked the other guy, what was he going to major in? And he said, biology. So I said, I'm going to major in chemistry. And I studied chemistry and did very, very well in it. And there were always jobs for chemists. And I used to think, since I came from a relatively ordinary family, not too wealthy, that I will never be out of a job. I'd be hired just because of what I know. I know chemistry. I'm very good at it. I've done all this work on it. So I got my first job as a chemist. Very, very first job as a chemist. And within a month, I was called in by my supervisor, brought up to the director of the research department, and I was told in no uncertain terms, John, we have a problem here. And I'm looking at him, and there's a sad look on his face, but he says, we got to deal with this problem. So I said, okay, tell me. He said, we'll have to fire you, unless... And when I heard that, I thought, oh my gosh, it's my first job. And I'm going to be fired, and it's just a few weeks or a few months. I don't remember now. He said, let me tell you why. You don't seem to be enthused by chemistry. I thought, oh my goodness. I said, of course I am enthusiastic about it. I have studied it. It's the thing I've been trained to do. He says, you may do it very well, but if you're not enthusiastic about it, if you are not happy about it, you'll never be the type of employee that we want in this. So we got a choice here. Either I fire you or I transfer you over to another department. Now, there's the quality control department where you will be running tests again in chemistry. But if I put you there, within another 3 weeks, you will be bored to death again. I know you want this job. So I tell you what we'll do. We'll put you into manufacturing where you will have your own little group of people working for you. And you will be a supervisor, a production supervisor in our plant in Newark, New Jersey in those days. And if that works out, okay. I thought when I went into the plant the first time, because here I used to wear these white coats in the lab. My fingers never got dirty. I had a jacket on or a shirt and tie on and so forth. Here I came to this giant of a plant, rumbling machines and guys from all over working and shouting and cussing and everything else. And I'm supposed to introduce myself to the plant superintendent, who will have me there for 2 weeks. And you know what we're talking about? We're talking about money. But look how it comes about. So I was going to be fired. I was not going to have any money. I wasn't even going to be on unemployment because I had barely worked 3 or 4 weeks. However, this guy who was the plant superintendent looked at me, and he was the first guy I ever remember in my life who said, you know, you look like a guru. Then I thought, what's he talking about? I'm going to lose my job, and I got to work with this guy for a while, and he's going to report on me. Within a few weeks, the report went back and a letter came to me. The plant superintendent says, you are so fantastic at what you do. You have a way of dealing with people that is amazing. You will do much better there. And as a matter of fact, we're giving you a 20% increase in salary. And I stayed there for a few years. I was promoted about 4 times in about 2 years and making a lot more than people twice my age and so forth. And I never once did I look for or ask for money. All I did is I made my work fun. I loved it so much so that I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to dislike it. And I kept thinking years later, I said, you know, what is it about chemistry? I love it. I love the esoteric beauty of an equation at times, but yet I was bored working in a lab. And here I found something. So there it is. It doesn't always have to be what you're trained to do. Now, you might say, okay, so what happened, John, in that place? Did you end up being general manager or anything? Well, I was promoted to manufacturing manager or whatever it is they call it of the plant where I was going to be fired in the first place. And I thought the irony, I went back there and some of the people who used to that I used to work for ended up working for me. But I got bored of that and I went and I looked for other things until I got way into all the stuff with different places and so forth. And I love the traveling. Notice what I'm saying, folks. Love what you do. Love what you do. The money will follow. And I loved what I was doing, and it expanded beautifully until one day I quit. I still wasn't satisfied. Why? I was getting bored. And then lots of things happened, and if all that path did not occur, you would never be hearing from me today, Steve, because I would never have written any books. I'd never have spoken in different places in the world, and you wouldn't be interviewing me today. It's that I looked around and found I didn't like to do those other things so much. And here I do the thing I really love.
Well, I'm glad that that worked out, and I'm glad you got bored, and I'm glad that you had that path in your life. So I appreciate that, because we are learning a tremendous amount from you. And John, you know, I agree completely with what you said, and I feel that the best advice that that I can give to anyone is to do what you love to do, something that you would do even for no money. And for me, of course, that's hypnotherapy, and for you, it's what you do with spreading ideas that are going to just enlighten and, in many cases, revolutionize people's way of being and way of interacting with the world, both metaphysically and physically. So what you say has such a practical application, yet it is based on such potentially complicated metaphysical concepts, which you make very simple for us. So we appreciate you doing that. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the idea of what I feel people get caught up in, which is looking at different things and thinking that they're not worthy of those things. What I mean by that is, let me take you back a few years. About 10 years ago, I had a client in my Beverly Hills office. He was very successful. He was a real estate agent, and he was about to buy a house for about $700,000, and it was right before the market went kaput. So goodness knows what it eventually ended up being worth, but he was doing very well, and he said to me that he said, you know, it's interesting, Steve. I worked with a lot of people helping them fulfill their dreams, and I found that it's all the same whether they're buying a house that's $300,000 or $3 million. It's a house. It's just a house. It's all in the way people look at it, and that's the way they interact with life. If they look at life and say, I can get the $300,000 house, then that's what they get. If they look at life and say, I can get the $3 million house, then that's what they get. And I thought at the time that it didn't quite make perfect sense to me, because I thought, well, it doesn't. I know I'm a hypnotherapist and I believe in abundance, the law of attraction, and so forth, but doesn't it have to do with how much money they have in their bank account or how much credit they have and so forth? And what he was actually talking about was something much more elaborate than that, which is, that's how they build up to that point in their life when they are about to make a purchase, the way they think about things. And as soon as people let go of the idea that $3 million is different from $300,000, then they start to see that they can have whatever they want. And having that new vision can be so challenging for people to really embrace that yes, if I just look at it differently, I can have something differently. Things will change in my life. Can you speak to that, John?
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's a part of this whole thing we're dealing with here, where it's how you look at it. It's really how you look at it. I remember saying once that stare at a monster and you will become like a monster. Stare at an angel and you will become angelic. There's something within us that binds itself to the thing we're looking at. In science, we have something called the observer effect, which means the observer changes that which he or she is observing. which means if we are looking at something and we name it or feel it's bad, it will reflect to us exactly what we think about it. You know, I told you when we met the first time, I remember quite a while back, Steve, and I immediately thought, what a cool guy you are. And I told you of my attachment to Star Trek, the various Star Trek, and I'm sure there's some people listening here who would relate to that. But for me, it was like all the lessons I need to learn are in these crazy little science fiction shows, the Star Trek thing. And I was talking about the earlier one, the classic, Star Trek classic with William Shatner. And I remember he was, the title of the one I looked at was called Shore Leave, where they ended up on a planet because they were tired and they were going to go on shore leave. That every sailor knows, you know, shore leave, it's time to take it easy, enjoy. But this planet was a strange planet because every time they thought of something, the thing happened. And one of the people in it was a guy by the name of Sulu. And he was thinking, you know, how he would like to fight with a samurai. And there a samurai appeared. And he didn't understand what happened. But whatever he thinks of came to be. Somebody saw the rabbit from Alice in Wonderland because he was thinking of a rabbit. Now, here is the captain himself, and there's a point to the story, and I want to make it very, very clear. The captain was very learned, very smart, very everything. That's why he was a captain. He was the captain, at least in the science fiction show. And he's walking around, and all of a sudden, he sees somebody that he remembers from his days at the academy, and I think the name of the guy he saw was Finnegan. Now, when they were in the academy many years before, he and Finnegan never got along. Finnegan always used to beat the heck out of him and tease him and whop him and stomp on him and everything else. But they both grew up a little, but still there was that stuff. And so he sees Finnegan, and Finnegan looks at him just like he did years before and say, "Hey, how are you, Jimmy boy?" And the guy's name was James, the captain of the Enterprise. And he says, "What are you doing here?" And Finnegan came up to him and whacked him. And they started fighting. And I laugh when I think of it, Steve. Finally, Kirk, Captain Kirk, got to the point where he knocked Finnegan down and then turned to him and said, "Who are you?" Now, I want everybody to write this down and listen to it over and over again. When James T. Kirk looked at Finnegan and says, "Who are you?" Finnegan said, "Exactly who you expect me to be, Jimmy boy." See the secret in that? It means that whatever they were expecting, that's what they were getting. Whatever they were thinking and believing and feeling in their minds was being projected there. Finally, the keepers of the planet discovered that these Earth people didn't know that they've got to watch their thoughts. So they taught them a few things and sent them on the way. But it shows you when we meet people, if somebody, most times, not always, but if somebody is reacting in a kind of a horrible way to you, a kind of an antagonistic way, immediately you tend to want to do that also. But you want to disarm the person? Just get quiet inside. Remember what we started talking about. Breathe slowly and deeply and change your mind. So the thing about this money stuff again, and I think it's really overrated because we're in a theater. It's exactly what we believe. We believe the economy is bad. Guess what? It's bad. The economy was brought down by bad news, and which precipitated bad actions. And whichever came first, I don't care. I'm not going to go into. I didn't study economics. I studied science. So all I know is that if you change your mind, change the way you look at it, it will change for you. It's a mirror. It's reflecting to you everything that. You're creating in your thoughts. You are the creator of these things. You couldn't go to the mirror and look at it and say, you know, I think, oh my goodness, here's a problem there. I've got this little mark on my face. I am going to take it off. I must have gotten a little ink on it or mud on it or whatever it is, or toothpaste on my face. And then you go to the mirror and you start rubbing the picture of you, the image of you, to get that bit of stuff off your face. It doesn't work if you because the mirror is reflecting exactly who you are. You want to get rid of that toothpaste on your face, you just wipe it off your face, and the mirror shows you a new you. So every day, now this might seem difficult, but this is the easiest part. We're saying change a little bit every day, not a whole lot. Don't let anything precipitate a major change at one shot, because that might be a little traumatic. Change a little every day, and then do it in a way where you're not attached to the outcome. If you do something, don't sit back. As people have told me this, I mean, I think it's the funniest thing. They've told me this. He says, I changed yesterday, but nothing happened today. That's like planting a seed tonight and looking at it to see whether it grew into an oak tree tomorrow. And then I sit back and I say, oh, woe is me. I believed and I planted the seed, but it didn't grow into an oak tree. How long is it going to take? As long as it takes an acorn to become an oak tree. So you plant these good thoughts a little at a time. Practice on believing them. You don't even have to remove the thoughts that were negative. They will flee by themselves as the good thoughts crowd them out. And then start believing in yourself. Self-esteem is such a necessary thing, because again, the world is not going to take you seriously if you don't trust and believe in yourself. Why should they? But again, as I said earlier, the world is powerless before someone who really, really believes in himself or herself. I mean, it takes a kind of a what is it I always say? There are two things necessary for success in this life. One is a sense of purpose, and the other is a touch of madness. I have, to a certain degree, a bit of a sense of purpose, but I have an overwhelming abundance of a touch of madness. And I think when I combine the two, they get me through a lot of stuff. Not always, but most times. And that's all we can ask. We can work on ourselves. We don't have to go work on money. We don't have to go work on health or relationships. We got to work on ourselves, because the same powers or the same abilities we use in acquiring wealth, in bringing money to us, the same ones are used to do other things, to keep us healthy, to bring relationships to us. I mean, it's like electricity saying to me, John, I'm going to permit you to watch and work on the computer because I'm electricity, but I don't feel like working the television, and I don't feel like turning lights on. It's the same electricity. The force doesn't have a choice. Guess who has the choice? You. And maybe one day we'll all remember that our greatest job on earth is really to make choices, to choose. And the minute we choose, magic starts happening. So choose wealth, choose happiness, choose joy, peace, hope, compassion, all the good things, because they're all tied in to what you're trying to get, which is money. But you don't have to go get it. It's there, and it's in the room next to you, and there's a door that really, really separates you from it. And you sit in the room where you are, and you look through that glass door, and you see all this money in there, and you wonder, if only I can get through the door, I'll get to where all this wealth is. And all you got to do is open the door. All the time you thought it was locked with a key. But there is no key. It's all free and open. You're free to think and believe whatever it is you want to. And you're free to think wealth, and you will be wealthy.
I think that's very well put, John. And I think that if more people embraced that, we'd see more people stepping into their greatness. One of the things that concerns me is The self-talk that I'm hearing a lot of people say, not just with my clients, but I hear people in the grocery store, when I go get coffee, it's pretty much everywhere, saying mantras to themselves, like, I've got no money, or I'm broke. And now some of the younger generation is saying, when they talk about money, and this is actually meant to be a good thing, but it's kind of worded incorrectly, I feel. They talk about sick money, and sick money actually means a lot of money. And they say, oh, he's got sick money. That means he's rich. And so talking about having a lot of money, using the term sick, isn't really doing any better than someone saying, I'm broke or I've got no money. Can you talk about this? I know you've already touched on it a little bit, but as we wrap up here, can you talk about what we can say that would be positive and empowering rather than these negative things that many people say?
Again, it all goes back to what that person thinks of himself. The reason he refers to sick money is because he doesn't have that much, or they don't have any respect for it. Money, like our health or our relationships, should be respected, not worshipped, mind you, not worshipped at all, just respected as a means of doing a lot of good, just like it is also a means of doing a lot of evil. And if we walk around and we keep the self-talk, it becomes, I'm just so happy you said that. It's like a mantra to them. If you keep repeating it and repeating it, they got so much money. I've heard even this term, that person is richer than God, got more money than God. Now, you know how ridiculous that is, because God's got the whole thing anyway. So they're saying things like that, and you can feel a kind of an anger or jealousy and so forth. So what I'm saying to people like this, review what you're thinking. Watch what you're saying, because as you say it, it becomes so. And if you think of sick money or bad money, then since you want to be good, you don't want to be with bad things. And then you would think deep in your subconscious, it says, money is bad, money is bad. Therefore, I want to be good, so I can't have any of that. Just like if you talk about sick versus health, sick money or sick, you know, I'm sick, I'm always sick. I know some people who have been sick for 40 years, and they're always sick, and nothing is really wrong except they believe it so much that they're sick. As you believe it, it occurs to you, because I don't know why it works that way, and I hope nobody ever asks me the question how it works, because my answer is going to be simple. Heck, I don't know, but I don't have to know how it works. I just know there are certain rules that we have discovered over the years from ancient times that if you ask, and you ask in a way that triggers the law of giving or triggers the law of attraction, and we said earlier, how do you ask water off the faucet? You turn it on. You don't sit there and pray, please, faucet, send me some water. I really need. All you got to do is take action, open it, work with yourself, watch your self-talk, watch what you're saying when you're not talking to other people, monitor the conversation in your mind, and you'd be amazed, absolutely amazed what you find there. In fact, you'd be embarrassed by a lot of things you're thinking, and then say to yourself, oh my goodness, it's been so long. I've been saying this to myself. No wonder this has happened and that has happened. And many times we don't see the connection. We really don't, because it's under the surface. But everything produces according to its kind. Good produces good. Good thoughts about money produce very good thoughts about more money. And then finally, money comes to you. As to how it comes, none of your business. Your job is just to choose, and it will come to you. And you have to trust it, you have to believe in it, and you have to just work with yourself, not with the bank account, not with anything else. Give service, be happy about what you're doing, and expect that eventually there will be a harvest, such a full harvest that you wouldn't have place to put all the money you will receive.
John, I know that the listeners are looking forward to that full harvest, and I know that they feel closer to that than ever before, having taken in your words of wisdom and getting ready to apply them in their lives. So thank you for spending so much time with us, John, talking about the metaphysics of money. Such a powerful topic, such a confusing topic for people who don't understand money, but now, thanks to you, we do understand it. So we're able to go ahead and implement those things that you've said into our lives and make that change and make it real. So thank you for that, John.
My pleasure. As always, looking forward to doing more of this later on.
Well, thank you, John. And on behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and my good friend, John Harry Turan, we wish you an abundant life.